plate a potential nugget.
And we'll get to the specifics of some of the things you say about how to build habits and break habits. But one of the things I really liked in the book, given that I'm curious about transitions, is you say that you work hard on the things that come easy, right? You go on to say that a good player works hard to win the game that others are playing. A great player creates a new game that favors their strengths and avoids their weaknesses. Say more about the crux of the insight here, James.
So this passage comes from a chapter where I talk about the influence of genes and personality on habits and behavior. And the basic idea is that we all have a certain set of strengths. There's some unique combination of strengths and weaknesses that make up each of us. And you can't control the genes that you were handed or the cards that you were dealt, but you can control kind of how you play those cards or what game you choose to play. And so as much as possible, you want to play games where the odds are in your favor, where you're more likely to be able to succeed. Now, this can mean a couple different things. First, in sort of like the personality sense, you know, the most robust measure of personality is what psychologists call the Big Five. So it measures personality in five spectrums. The one that people are most familiar with is introversion on one side, extroversion on the other. But there are a variety of others: openness to experience, conscientiousness, et cetera. And for some of these, for all five of these spectrums, they've been linked to the underlying genetic code in some way. There's some connection between your DNA and that personality. And so as an example, people who are high in agreeableness, which is one of the spectrums, tend to be warm and kind and considerate. And then you can imagine that if someone's personality is that they're high in agreeableness, so they're warm and kind, and maybe they're also high in extroversion, well, it might be much easier for them to build a habit like writing thank you cards or organizing social gatherings and getting people together after work, things like that, because it aligns more with their natural skill set. And so the first step in this, I think, is raising self-awareness. Once you can become more aware of who you are, what your strengths are, what you're kind of naturally inclined to do, you can start to seek out habits, behaviors, games, where it's more likely that you'll be able to succeed in that realm. So that's kind of the core idea. And then the big takeaway, I think, is that a lot of the time people don't like talking about genes or DNA or, you know, your biological inclinations, because they feel like, oh, well, if it's in my genetic code, then like, why bother? It must be fixed. But I don't think that's the right lesson to take from this. I think instead the lesson is your genes don't tell you not to work hard. What they tell you is where to work hard. They don't say it doesn't matter what your strategy is because it's just destiny. Instead they inform your strategy. And so by having better self-awareness, you can develop a better strategy to work for you and your goals.
Got it. And just picking on that, James, is there something to be said about when we have clarity on these things? I was talking to Herminia Ibarra, who's a professor at London Business School, who's written the book Working Identity, and she talks about transitions and sort of really wayfinding your way into something else. So on the things that come easy, how challenging or straightforward is it for people to figure that out as they think about where they want to build the habits?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think anybody has a perfect answer to this, but there are a couple things that you can look for. So the first thing that you can do is, and this is something I reference in the book as well, the basic idea is called the explore-exploit trade-off. And so early on in any process, what you want to do is explore broadly. So you can do this as big of a level as you want or as small as a level. So like a big level would be, what should I do for my career? Well, perhaps for the first, say, 5 years or first decade, you actually explore kind of widely. Maybe you take a different job every 2 years. Maybe you try a few different industries, intern at a couple different places. But the idea here is to develop a range of experiences. Maybe you're even in the same company, but you just change to different departments every few years. And so the idea here is to explore widely so that you can get exposure to a lot of possible paths. And then once you have that experience, then you can start to narrow and switch from explore to exploit, which is let me take advantage of the best option I know of now. And so that's kind of a big way to do that. We do this, for example, with relationships. This is the period of dating, is what we call explore. And then once you decide to get married or commit to someone, then we're talking about exploiting the one relationship that works best for you. And so you can also do it, though, on a small scale. So, for example, let's say you have a project and you have 6 weeks to complete it. Well, for the first week or two, maybe actually you brainstorm a bunch of different ways to attack the project. You research a lot of potential options. But then as you get closer and closer to the deadline, now it starts to become more urgent that you actually get it done. And so rather than always looking for a better solution, you just commit to the solution that you are closest to at that point. And so there are kind of two ways to make that distinction. The one is, how close am I to the deadline? How close am I to like needing to get a result now? And if you're getting closer, then it's like, well, maybe I should just focus on the best solution that I found. The other way to do this, though, is that the more that you're getting results, the more you should exploit the option that you have. And the less that you're getting results, the more you should explore for other options. And that is, again, it's hard to describe this and what exactly you should do for any individual, but people kind of implicitly know what that feels like. Like, for example, when I started my business, I started 3 or 4 different websites for the first 2 years, and they all went okay, but none of them really did well. And then when I started jamesclear.com, I was a little over 2 years in, and it just went better. I was writing about habits and behavior change for the first time. Previously, I'd been trying a bunch of other things related to business and marketing. And when I started writing about that, the audience just took off much faster than usual. And so while it's hard for me to describe exactly what that should feel like for you, if you are trying a variety of things, you will know when the results are coming easier. And that's one of the good pieces of advice that I got early on, was try things until something comes easily. And it doesn't mean that it's easy in the sense that you barely have to put any effort in, but it does mean that the results come much easier than the other things that you have tried.
This is such a powerful point that James makes here. If I reflect on my own journey, I go back about 20 years to my classes in IIM Ahmedabad. I'd come there after graduating from IIT Madras, so I assumed that I ought to like quant-based courses, which I did. But if I really reflect on the courses that I enjoyed the most and gravitated towards, they were the courses in organizational behavior. Even in my 4 years in IIT Madras, my favorite course was actually microeconomics, which was offered by the humanities department. And when I reflect on why this might have been the case, I think it was because the course was about understanding consumer psychology when it came to things like competitive advantage, marginal utility, price elasticity, and so on. Now, I don't think I listened to this inner voice at that point in time, but it took me much longer, about 13 years later when I was in McKinsey, to discover this. As the consultants were evaluated on 3 dimensions, IQ being the intellect, CQ being the capability quotient of a consultant, and RQ being the relationship quotient, RQ was turning out to be my spike, and I decided to lean into it and eventually joined executive search at Egon Zehnder. And from then on, branched off to do what I do now. But the point I'm making is that there's something to be said about working hard on the things that you gravitate towards anyways. It has only been 3 years since I branched off on my own to run the podcast and my leadership and transition advisory. But I can say that it does feel like play quite often. It doesn't feel like a chore. One of my guests at the podcast was Abhijit Bhaduri, the author of Digital Tsunami. I asked him if he had any concluding thoughts for people to play to their potential. And this is what he said.
I think it's a terrific title for the AND world, that you have to learn how to play and explore your potential through play. So it's not just work. I mean, it's play which is actually going to tell you much more.
What feels like play is directly linked to your genetic and personality code that James Clear talks about. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com. If you're deriving value from the content and want to show your gratitude to the podcast, I request you to pay it forward by contributing to an organization that I'm supporting, Antarang Foundation. It helps thousands of children from challenging backgrounds play to their unique potential. Please visit the Pay It Forward section at playtopotential.com to know more.